This video is brought to you by Holocaza. Our tool transforms independent local real estate agents to global real estate agents. Create your own profile for free and get contacted by international investors. Sign up with the link in the description. Hello and welcome everyone to our 84th session of Holocaza. My name is Michael and today I'm talking to Antonio Barbosa from Portugal and I'm super happy to have him on the show today. Antonio is originally from the US and has lived in Portugal for 20 years and has also executed his profession of real estate for 20 years. And he helps both domestic and foreign investors to buy real estate in Portugal. Antonio, welcome so much to the show. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for having me here. And so my background, you know, like you said, I was born in Angola, but I moved to the United States early on. And that's where I got my my degree, business administration. And I did my life there for 30 years almost. And then the last 20 years, I've been living in Portugal. And all of it has been since a passion that I knew that I found. Was real estate and working, you know, in the real estate market. And so, yeah, and that's, you know, that's what it is.
Amazing. From Angola via the US to Portugal, that definitely sounds like I already know we need to have another session about just this journey. Jumping in directly to your real estate profession and also to real estate right now in Portugal. Give us maybe an overview of right now the market of real estate. How is it moving? What is going on also with respect to COVID and obviously also with respect to the golden visa?
Okay. The market, you know, it's been like last year in a typical year, very different than like myself and most colleagues. We've been doing very well with the domestic market, mm-hmm. which the Portugal is a service-oriented industry. So, and we are very dependent on the tourism. We're very dependent on the external investment. But this year, because of various factors of the moratoriums, you know, on the credits and, you know, and certain things that just, you know, contributed for the first time home buyer, domestic, wanting to have their own home. Mm-hmm. So low interest rates, you know, there's so many factors that contributed to that growth market domestically. Externally, you know, it's the people, nobody's traveling in. So, you know, there is no, you know, when you talk about the real estate market, in general, like the luxury market itself has lowered significantly, mm-hmm. In the sense where, like, you know, maybe there's a 40% drop, you know, 30-40% drop in the Algarve, especially in Lisbon, Cascais, the more premium areas where in Porto, the bigger cities, they felt that much more because, you know, there's nobody coming in to visit those properties, mm-hmm. you know. So things have slowed down for sure. Mm-hmm.
Right now, you also talking a lot on different channels. We talked a lot on Clubhouse also. That's where we met with foreign direct investors from the US. Do you see a certain trend going on and a certain motivation which has been triggered lately during the last couple of years for US investors, which are mainly also interested when it comes to investing in Europe, choosing Portugal, or has it always been like that?
No, you know, it's progressively, although they can't fly out, I mean, to come here, okay, because of the restrictions, the amount of Americans, I think Americans are finding out that Portugal exists. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I know that they know where Portugal is, and there are quite a few expats and Americans living in Portugal at the moment and have been for a couple of years. But I think in the last year, but it has to do with a lot of stuff that's happening in the U.S. People aren't happy. Some people are happy that Trump won. Some people are happy that, you know, or Trump won, Trump lost, that Biden is now the president. You know, one is happy, one is sad, mm-hmm. you know. So either way, people are looking, and what they're looking for, and I think mostly Americans, they're looking for the quality of life. And that's what Portugal has to offer in that sense, because it really is about it. And I think when they compare what they can get in a lot of other countries, like, for example, you know, Americans usually buy, for the most part, in closer to Mexico, etc., South America, you know, Spain, Italy, etc. So they're discovering Portugal, and what they're discovering about Portugal is the quality of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it is, you don't have to be a millionaire. You can rent the property, you can live here, and, you know, have a great quality of life, mm-hmm. of having, like, you know, I mean, I could tell you, like, on a budget of like 2,000 euros or less, much less than that. I mean, it's comfortably to live, to have all the expenses for like a monthly expense of like 2,000 euros between rent and everything and, you know, whatever. But even buying a home, then you're set. And it's what I always say. People move here because of the golden years and retiring. There's advantages. And it's, we have programs like the Golden Visa, as you mentioned before, which are very attractive. And those are also incentives for them to move here, to have a second passport, which I think Americans, and in general, many other countries, like China, like a lot of other countries, what they've noticed with the COVID is that, you know, it's good to have a second passport. Mm-hmm. And so they're investing in buying a property where they can secure a residency here. Mm-hmm. And then to eventually get that second passport, because, you know, you're going to have, you know, COVID was one disease. You're going to have many of them throughout the next 5, 10, 20 years. But the possibility to be mobile, you know, to be able to, you know, to come in, you know, if you're a Portuguese citizen, then you can be, you, even if COVID is happening in China or in Brazil or United States, then you can travel to Portugal because you have that permission and it's you're authorized. And so I think the majority of the Americans are looking for in the second passport and the residency to have it. And it's a great tool. In addition to the tax benefits, you know, like the we have programs for the non-habitual residents where they're not going to be paying any income tax, or whether capital gains tax or even from royalties, people, personalities like Madonna and a few other. I mean, that's Madonna is just the biggest one, you know, but there's others, you know, as well. And where they choose Portugal to live because they're not going to be paying any royalties on the income that they're having for the next 10 years. You know, so not only the Golden Visa offers that that possibility for the NHR status or what it stands for, non-habitual resident, but also a traditional visa like a D7 visa. And a D7 visa works the same way. It's a residency visa, which is the same for Golden Visa. It's the same. It's a residency requirement. It's a way to buy a property through a residency scheme. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, there's been a lot, Michael. Coming in.
Can you give us a quick overview once again for the ones who don't might have a question about how the Golden Visa scheme works, especially with respect to real estate?
Okay. The Golden Visa was a program created in 2012 to jump boost, you know, the economy after we had the financial crisis, you know, like everywhere else in the world. Portugal created this mechanism. It's a tool, it's a scheme for investing in Portugal to securing a residency. It doesn't mean that because it's a process after 5 years, you can apply and only in the sixth year, then you can receive, you apply for the actual citizenship. So the Golden Visa is an authorization for you to live in Portugal for 5 years. And what happens? The first year, you don't have to live here all year round. It's mandatory to live 7 days the first year, and I think, well, 14 days the second year, and you have to renew the application the first year, and then the second year, and then the fourth year. So you have to renew the application 3 times, okay? And it begins, there's levels, and it begins at the initial investment, the lowest investment, and it doesn't even have to be property. For example, you can invest or secure a Golden Visa through an investment of 250,000 euros in the art or culture, etc. Okay, and the next level, you can buy a property in a low density area. What I mean by that, in the rural countryside, you know, not high, if like not in the center of a city. And if you're buying, and because the reason why they want to promote outside of the big metropolitan areas. So at 280,000 euros, you can secure golden, well, the residency, you know, the golden visa, it's part of the program, buying in a property that's more than 30 years old in a low density area. And then you have the next level is a 350,000 euro investment where you can buy, you know, in the center of a metropolitan area because you're going to be renovating an old building. So they want to, again, impulse the requalification of the interiors of the cities because there's a lot of olden buildings. And so they have incentives for that. And one of those is the Golden Visa where the 350,000 euro investment, again, on a property 30 years old. But the most traditional, and this is what everybody knows, it's the easiest way, the quickest. You buy a property, it's 500,000 euros. It's the simplest. And the majority of the programs, 90%, maybe 95% of the issue, when they issue the residency permits through Golden Visa scheme, it's on a property that's over 500,000 euros. And, you know, and then there's a process. Like I said, it's the first year, it's an application, you renew it, and then it's for two more years, and you have to, and after the fifth year, okay, then you can apply for a permanent citizenship. Mm-hmm. But the Golden Visa, it doesn't give you the, you know, like, it's an authorization to live here. It's a residency authorization. Just the same way, like, if you ask about the D7 visa, it's the same way. It's an authorization to live and work in Portugal.
Technically, do I have to make sure before I buy the property, is it that I have before to make sure with the municipality or the government that this particular property is eligible for the Golden Visa, or is it I just buy the property, let's
it's
say
standard.
For 500,
it's standard.
Okay, so for 500 it's, bucks and 500,000 bucks, and then I go afterwards to say, hey, by the way, I'm property owner, here's the certification, here's here.
No, you have, this is a process. When buying, it's an application that usually I would recommend a lawyer. I would.
Okay.
I mean, you could do it over the internet. You could do it over the internet. I mean, it is. If you go on www.sef.pt, it's Serviço de Estrangeiros Fronteiras.
Okay.
And it's an application. You could do it on your own, but it's highly recommendable to use a lawyer because then imagine if you're going to be living out, you're going to be here only 1 week out of the year, which is mandatory. Okay, it's convenient to have a power of attorney for the lawyer anyway, because you're going to be receiving taxes and this and that and, you know, any other legal stuff. It's always have a power of attorney. So a lawyer will do the applications and all the requirements. And it's a process that when you're buying the property, it's already it's a simultaneous. You do it in simultaneous. You know.
Okay, perfect. No, that makes sense. Sometimes it's also interesting to know exactly the technicalities and to go a little bit into the nitty gritty stuff to understand, okay, going to this sef.pt and then you can either do it on your own, or you just go and search for a lawyer helping you with
For example, for the D7 visa, for example, mm-hmm. The application through the internet, it's 49 euros and 50 cents, mm-hmm. something like that. Okay. And so if you do it on your own, you submit it. It's not that complicated, you know. But again, it's the whole thing is about a lot of when they're buying the properties, not, you know, for the usually for the golden visa, they're not living here. They're buying. Again, it's a scheme. It's a way to secure residency. So and ultimately a second passport. And that's the magic word, a second passport, which is makes it more attractive. Because then you could become a Portuguese citizen, and but it's always recommendable. I mean, I have not had a client that has not used a lawyer because of it.
Got it. Okay.
Because then they have a power of attorney, and you know they do. There's a lot of other legal stuff. Imagine that, you know, the SEF sends a letter for you to renew something. You know what I mean, or whatever.
And you're not there.
If you don't do the right, you know, if you miss out on a deadline or something or a date. You automatically excluded from it, you know, and even you bought the property, it doesn't matter. you have to do there's certain requirements,
absolutely.
And it's always good.
Makes sense. Jumping a little bit into Portugal and the geography and giving us a little bit maybe your point of view and your hints and insights about where to buy some interesting
municipalities, some interesting regions, for the ones who might know Portugal but have not been there, also for the ones who have traveled but are maybe interested in, say, okay, this region, this area right now is definitely interesting. Give us right now your point of view and maybe also your insights there.
Okay. I always suggest to any, I mean, there's definitely areas that I suggest, because not because it's a personal favorite where I go, but it's because it has to do with the quality and quality of life, price, affordability. So there's certain areas, and but again, everything has to do with each own's budget and lifestyle. And you know, you can have a 100,000 euro apartment in Faro, okay, because you don't mind being in a bigger city, etc. But you're close enough to the beach, and you want to be in the Algarve because of the weather, etc. So you don't have to spend half a million euros. So every city, it depends on the lifestyle. But the for me, the most, where I see the most growth, or the people look for, obviously there's 3 points, and they're always going to be like that. It's going to be in the Algarve, Lisbon, Cascais, Porto, because of a lot of families, you know, they want to go to international schools, mm-hmm. their children. So either that's where they are. I mean, there's other, you know, the majority of them are concentrated there. But areas like the Silver Coast of Nazaré, Peniche, Lourinhã, that whole Silver Coast, which the Silver Coast is anywhere between the Atlantic, leading from Cascais, or, you know, further up from Sintra, etc., all the way up to, you know, Nazaré, etc. You know, that's an area that for me is very affordable, excellent, because you have great mild weather. Mm-hmm. And the quality of life that you can have. And even if schools, there's international schools there, they're coming more, because what they notice is that more and more foreign buyers are coming into those areas. And so they're having infrastructures for them. And then the other area that's quite interesting is, and it's interesting because it's where usually outside of Lisbon, in the Comporta, okay, in the Comporta area, a very expensive, posh area, very expensive. But again, you have like 60 kilometers of a beach, mm-hmm. you know. And the area of the Vicentine coast, or the southwest Alentejo region, is also very affordable, quality of life, in terms of what you get for your money and the value of a property, but all the infrastructures, and you know, more and more in those two little areas, which are like in between. And then, of course, there's always the client that wants to live off-grid. Mm-hmm. So off-grid is like out in, you know, Castelo Branco. Those areas have seen 30% increase not only in prices, but also in people looking for those properties. Maybe because due to the factor of the COVID, mm-hmm. people just want to be away and away and far away from everybody. But people, I've seen, like, you know, in those, the statistics don't lie, but there's been an increase in those urban, not urban, but more far away areas, yeah. you know, more isolated areas, off grid, etc. There's quite a few, actually. I was very surprised when I see more and more clients looking for those properties, whether they're the U.S., but even like the Belgium, the Dutch, English, the Europeans, not so much the U.S. No, the U.S. buyers are, you know, they want the Cascais, they want the expats regions, because they're not going to learn Portuguese, mm-hmm. and so they want to, you know, they want to be able to go to a bar or a restaurant and somebody that speaks English, etc., or the schools and everything. And you know, when they're living out in the countryside, far away from everything, you know, from a lot of what's going on in bigger cities. But it's an increase as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this overview. And you just mentioned one thing which is very interesting, that you don't only have the overseas investments, you also have the international buyers from within Europe.
But domestic, the last couple of months, last year, the whole year, I mean, you know, nobody was coming in and properties were being sold. And, you know, and I mean, since October, I've been busy. I mean, busy like... okay, you generally, you know, you have, but I've seen like in the last, I've had in the last couple of months, just Portuguese buyers. And it's okay. It's one of those things that like, fantastic. And generally, I would, you know, maybe 70% is international. Wow. We're now, but and 30% was domestic. But now it's probably the opposite. You know, we're 70% domestic and 30%. So when things will balance out, when all this gets back to, you know, the crazy normal that we're used to before all this stuff happened. And, you know, everything. And, you know, when you mention about the property market, I'll tell you something about Portugal. Portugal, in the last 20 years, the properties here and the market has always been steady. We had a, the reason we had, I've been through, I wouldn't say crisis here in Portugal, but the biggest pinch, you know, the most difficult time was right after the subprime financial crisis, etc. And what happened? It wasn't because properties were not being sold, is because money, the banks were not giving money away to buy properties. So things, it wasn't because the market didn't move or wasn't selling, is because there was no financial support, you know, for people to buy properties here in Portugal. I'm talking about the domestic market, not the foreign market. And, you know, so now with the COVID and the government's, not only the interest rates, and you look at it, you know, in Portugal and the rest of Europe, because it has to do with the Euribor, you know, from the central bank, European Central Bank, and interest rates are extremely low, but they have been for the last 5 years or so. And but more and more people, because instead of, you know, and that's what I say, the market that I have more is like a first-time home buyer. Instead of renting a property where they're paying 400 euros per se per month, you know, like a three-bedroom apartment or a three-bedroom house, you're not going to find for 400 euros, but an apartment, you know, or in Lisbon, you have like, you know, an apartment for like, you know, 800, 900 euros per month or so, okay? That same person will now can get a mortgage and they buy their property and they buy their flat, their three-bedroom flat, and they pay less for that same instead of paying a rent. And it's something that they call their home. You know what I say? It's having your own home. It's priceless. There's no value. You can't put a price on it. And I think more and more the Portuguese, they have conditions for the borrowing, and you know there's certain things now where it's available and they can do that. So the first time home buyer and the client that naturally maybe wants to leave the city and they want to buy in the countryside, that's a phenomenon. You know, it's a phenom for the COVID, because people just want to. They don't want to be locked up again. In case this ever happens again, they don't want to be stuck in an apartment with a veranda. You know what? They want a little bit of a garden and space, you know, to play around and you know. And so it's been good for that market, for the more domestic market.
Transaction costs for property. How much of percentage? Can you name a percentage of it, which you can more or less say that's a general percentage when you buy a property, or does it depend on the
per square meter? You mean per square meter construction per square meter? For example, like buying, like rebuilding it, like if you buy a piece of land and you want to build a house, right? Something like that, right? Yeah. Is that what you mean? Yeah. That's okay. For example, in general, you're looking at, you know, normal traditional construction. If you're building 100 square meters or 200 square meters, I mean, for new builds, you know, because it's that one thing is when you're building something, and the other thing is when, for example, for evaluation of a property, there's a cost to build it, but the bank can evaluate and they have certain criteria that they evaluate a property. And right now it's 1,120 something euros. It's been going up, and where they do evaluation. So if you have an apartment with 100 square meters, let's just go by numbers easily. Mm-hmm. So at 1,000, so that apartment will be in the general area. Of course, it's not the you know, you're not going to find that apartment 100 square meters in the downtown area of Lisbon for 112,000 euros. You know, you're not going to find it. You're going to find it for 1 million euros. So you're looking at 1,000 euros a square, or 10,000, or 6,000, or 10,000 euros a square meter. But in general, and at a national level, the evaluation for like a property, for a bank assessment and the value of it, 100 square meters, it's 112,000. Let's just say. But when you're building that same, you're building a house and you're building it new. And you know, and you know, a traditional, because you're looking at anywhere between a 500 euros to 600 euros a square meter. So it's the numbers. If you're building a house of you know, 100 square meters times 600 euros, etc., there's a cost, you know what I mean? Like, and it's, the numbers are there. It's you're not going to go away from that. And that's it. But you can get all this data from the finance office and the national internet. It's the Instituto Nacional Estatística. It's the way, it's not our MLS like you have in the United States and everything, but it's data, certified data from the government that they clear this X amount per square meter for the evaluations, etc. These are all datas that are public. They are public, that information. You have to just, if you go on ene.pt, you get all the information.
Taxes on yearly taxes on property prices, does that depend on the municipality, or is that or does that depend on how do you call it, on the size of the building?
Both every municipality. It's called the IMI, Imposto Municipal de Imóvel, which is basically the property tax, okay? But it's called IMI. So your IMI, it depends on where you live, because if you live in Lisbon and you have certain infrastructures, the amount of tax on the property is one thing. If you live out in a more interior area, it's going to be a lot less because you don't have the infrastructures like basic sewerage, high-speed internet, you know, infrastructures of it. And so it depends on county to county, from, you know, municipality to municipality, but also depends, of course, on the size of the house, you know, and the amount of land, the amount, the size of the construction. So it's both factors.
A little bit about jumping to your business and your services. Give us an overview of all the service lines you are offering to your clients.
I carry them like this. Whatever they need. It's not only about real estate. If I had to tell you stories, even the client after they buy a property, but buying, you know, the services that, you know, the services that they receive are simple. It's basic. I mean, you know, you have a client where if they want to have a friend to continue, because a lot of the times, even domestic, or, you know, even say domestic, because sometimes somebody moving from Porto to up north or down south, etc., they don't know the area. So it makes sense whether sometimes... But it's easier for a Portuguese person, obviously, because they understand the language and they can manipulate or get around and figure out what is necessary to get done. But if you imagine if you're somebody that it's the first time living in a foreign country, but you've chosen an area, you've chosen a house, then you need a lot of follow-up work. Mm. You know? And so I work, you know, this is after. Before, what happens? I work with buyers, majority of buyers. Okay, I'm more of a buyer's agent. My team... they work with the listings, you know, and then I also work with my colleagues throughout Portugal, because again, I'm not going to have a property for sale in the Algarve. I'm not going to have a property in Lisbon or Porto. I'm mainly in the north region, from Porto and up, in the Minho, okay, which is from, you know, real close to Spain. But if I need a property in the Algarve or in Lisbon or anywhere in between, or Madeira or the Azores, I have a group of network of colleagues that I work with where they have that property for my client. Okay. They will have. So I work, or I try, if they don't have it, I will find it for them, because it's there. And so it's a matter of working with colleagues, and they share their listings where they are the listing agent, and I represent the buyer, and they benefit from a service instead of dealing directly with, you know, because there's like a dual representation. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get somebody that's interested in buying and work with a buyer agent, what that enables them to do is have more of somebody to represent them, to fight for them, to make them, make sure they're not overpaying for the property, to do a lot of stuff, you know. So they benefit from that service at cost zero, and then, you know, and then closing on the property, making the offer, etc., opening up a bank account, the lawyer, the accountant. Even if somebody's buying a piece of land and or ruin, they want to renovate, having an architect, it's a team. You know what I mean? So it's important to have those the team alongside
the network. It's very interesting. So, you know, like, you don't know only about just, you know, the transaction itself, like, buyer come to my side, buy it here, let's go to the lawyer, let's close it, and arrivederci.
It's not that
arrivederci,
simple.
We never see each other.
I wish it was that simple. I wish it was that simple. No, sometimes I have a client that the way it works, Michael, is that, for example, like a client is only going to be moving here in 6 months or in a year because their children want to finish their term in school. Mm-hmm. So I have a few clients from the U.S. working right now that when they finish school in June, they'll be able to move here. I have clients that are planning ahead like 2 years from now. And it's good when you're buying this is for the foreign markets where you plan ahead like 2 years time and you start looking at the market. So people and my clients, that's the benefit. They start looking at, okay, what is the goal of the visa? It's this, the school, the education, the healthcare. They start asking a lot of questions and, you know, and that's information and help them along the way. And, you know, and I'm sure that if you give that kind of service to begin with, everybody says, oh, I give good service. Mm. Everybody gives a good service. We are in the service industry, you know?
Makes total sense. It makes total sense. I think that's the way to go. I have a question. You just mentioned the buyer agent. And I know you come from the U.S. and things move a little bit different in the U.S. concerning...
they move quickly. Move a lot quicker.
You also mentioned the MLS. So now you're back in Portugal. And I want to ask you how the collaboration also works between real estate agents in Portugal. How do you make sure that, let's be frank, someone doesn't screw you over and, you know, everything is correct and you say, hey, you know, let's collaborate. I'm going to give you this business or this person's interested. I'm going to refer you because I trust you, and that this person doesn't run away with, you know, with the commission
you're going to be paid for the job well done. You're going to be doing a great service for the buyer and you want to get compensated. And the way I do it, I've been doing it for 20 years mm-hmm. now. And the only way that I've done it and I've been able to do it for so long is to create great collaboration with colleagues. Unfortunately, we don't have an MLS system mm-hmm. here. We have things that are similar to MLS, but there's no, you know, in the multiple listing service, the United Kingdom is going to start implementing. I'm not sure about France. Spain doesn't have one. So there's a lot of disorganization. But that doesn't stop from you to have the personal connection with the mm-hmm. colleague. And that's the most important thing. And so when I see a property, even if I don't know the colleague, okay, and if I don't know them, hey, listen. And the first question I ask, do you work with other estate agents? And some say, no, we don't share our listing. Okay, thank you. Have a nice mm-hmm. day. You know, and you know what I do? That because they, for whatever reason, they don't want to share because they want to be greedy. But that's changed. That may be years ago, but everybody shares their listing. They do. You have one or two people, you know, that maybe you contact and stuff. But then they call you back and they say, oh yeah, you know, okay, let's talk. And then we talk and we say, you know what, let's collaborate. You have the property. Your property owner wants to sell it. I have the buyer. And 99.9% of the time, the colleague will say, you know what? Of course. Yeah. There's that one. You're always going to have somebody, you know, it's not a perfect world, but they have the listing. I have the client after the deal is done and you split the compensation and he does the work of getting the listing, all the documentation, everything ready to do the closing. I do the other legwork, the other part of the job, which is the qualifying the client, making sure that this is the property they're getting. They're going to be getting the service of after sale, and even, well, during the sale as well, with to securing that they have the contrato promessa compra e venda. Mm-hmm. It's an acronym that means it's CPCV, which is basically it's a promissory contract, securing the contract, doing until the closing time with the lawyer, everything accompanying. And, you know, I do that part of the job, and that's the part I'm getting compensated. And the buyer doesn't pay anything for that. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of times people usually work, they want to work with, well, they work, they don't work, but they contact a property seller or the listing agent directly, and then who is representing who? You know, as a dual agent, you are, you know, you're representing the buyer, you're representing the seller. Who are you representing? Who are you working for? I'm working for the buyer, you know, and that's the difference. And it's a service that they don't pay anything extra for, and again I get compensation. I've never had a problem with not receiving compensation, because if you're in the business for a long time and the colleague wants to do business and he wants to do business with you, he's not gonna, you know, short.
Yeah,
you.
The market is small. It's too small for that. So there's no need of a.
No, and it's a small. And if you do it once, you will be run out of business, because then you will never be doing business. And so it doesn't exist. I think anybody that's been, for the most part, like I said, 99.9%.
It's very interesting, actually, because I had Teresa Grobecker on the show from San Francisco, and she is implementing a referral system based on the blockchain to make sure that, you know, like everything is getting immutably recorded and stuff. And here we go, you know, 2020 in Portugal, and you say like, hey, shake hands or WhatsApp chat and say yes, no, deal done, and that's it. So it's interesting how things might be different in one market and the other. And obviously I think this might be also generically for the state of the Portuguese market, because it indeed, I assume, it's a very small one. So this is definitely,
it's small. But even myself, if, for example, when I send or when I receive incoming referrals, mm-hmm. you know, that what that means is that I have a colleague from in Portugal. I mean, it doesn't have to go. You don't have to go outside of here. Let's just stay within our border. So I have a colleague in Lisbon, and they have a client that either wants to buy or they want to sell a property here in my region where I do listings. So they want to have, they want to sell, whether it's inheritance. You know, there's people from the north that live in Lisbon, but they inherited a property, so they want to sell. And what they do, they send me, even in writing, it's a referral agreement that I'm going to accept that client. It's there, you sign it. It's valid for what it's valid. It probably, you know what I mean? And so, but there is something in writing that, you know what, you accept the client. So if you ever have to go, if there's a dispute, you know, to get a compensation,
you have to let that. Okay, gotcha.
I'm owed 25%. Okay. You know, and so, and it works the same way external, or you know, or if I send them, you know, I have a client of mine here in my region that wants to sell a property in Lisbon, then I send the contact there, and I'm going to be compensated for that referral.
Okay, there's a standard referral contract you use normally. Got it. Okay. Okay.
I mean, you got to have a referral. It's always great. And then, because then the broker of the office signs it, the listing agent signs, or the agent that's going to be ultimately responsible for that client, yes, he's going to sign it. And, you know, and it's when you put those things in writing, business is easy to do with, and it's easier, you know, so.
Makes sense. Just making sure I understand that correctly, the buyers or the buyer does not pay the buyer's agent. So if that's the standard in Portugal.
It can be, okay, the law, okay, the law permits, and I mean, there's two kinds of laws, but the law, even here in Portugal, I govern myself from, you know, there's a law of ethics that has to do with the National Association of Realtors, with the NAR. And being a realtor, there's a code of ethics that you have to follow. And obviously, you know, even you can never do a double charging for a client. But you can have a client that says to you, listen, you find me the property, I'm going to pay you the commission. Okay? You can have that. You have it in writing from the buyer, and he signs. But then you're not working for the seller. Mm-hmm. You're working for the buyer. He's paying you the commission. But then you have a buyer contract, not a seller contract. Mm-hmm. You have a buyer contract. And then it's permitted, even in Portugal. What you can't do is charge two commissions, from the seller and from the buyer. And that same deal, that is illegal. In the United States, it's not even about illegalities that you lose your license.
Yeah.
Here in Portugal, you will lose your license as well, because you can't be double compensated for the same deal, getting a commission from the seller. And because what happens is, the buyer, never pay. And usually that I've never done it in my 20 years. I've never had a client assign a buyer contract with me. Maybe one day I'll have it. I don't know. I'd never say I won't drink from that water from that cup, but I'm still waiting to see. Because why? The seller, when he sells the property, he gets a invoice, which then, because he can apply, for example, he has whatever the commission he's paying, he has an invoice for that amount, and he presents it at the end of year for the taxes. So it's deductible, not only as in IRS, okay, number one, and number two, if you have capital gains, for example, you know, that he may have some capital gains on the property. So that invoice can deduct, and the buyer can't, you know, the buyer will not, that won't deduct anything from it, but so the seller gets that invoice, and it's simple. It's the simplest thing. But never a buyer will, again, if any buyer that contacts me or any other colleague of mine, they pay zero. What they have to pay is the closing costs, the lawyer, if there's processing fees for like processing of the visa documents, the golden visa, the other, you know, all any documents to process, a lawyer or an accountant, etc., the legal framework or the legal work of it, then the buyer pays for that, of course, and all of the property taxes, the transfer tax, mm-hmm. of the property, you know, because there's a property transfer tax, there's a stamp duty tax, etc. The buyer pays all those things. The seller has to have all the documentation, you know, of the property, and that is required by law to do the closing, but never. So those are distinct.
Can we go quickly through those numbers concerning so that the audience also knows what more or less they have to expect for expenses? First the commission. Sure. First the commission on the buyer's side. More or less, is there a range? Because I know that from different countries, sometimes when it's rural, then
the buyer or the seller.
First the seller side commission. Yeah, I was listening. Don't worry. the seller side commission.
It's usually anywhere between I remember. You know, 20 years ago, or even, you know, whatever, you would, or 10 years ago, you could charge a 5% commission or some even higher to the property owner.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, you know, 5% is what people would, is a normal. But again, years ago, it was necessary to do a lot of ads on newspapers, mm-hmm. magazines. Nowadays, what do you have? Internet. So any publicity is basically not on Facebook, Marketplace, etc. You have a lot of ways to, you have portals that the property, the listing agent can place a property there, whether they pay X amount of euros per month or per year. There's a lot of portals to place the property, mm-hmm. even a property owner, mm-hmm. they place the property there. So there's a lot of other mechanisms that you don't have. They're less inexpensive, mm-hmm. where you don't have to have a bigger budget to effectively compensate for the cost of actually getting the job done. Because if you have to sell the property, you have to promote it. Now there's many more effective ways to promote the property that are free. So you can, I wouldn't say, so like if I have a, you know, anywhere between a 3-4%, 5% commission, but
that's fine. Okay, that's a range. Okay.
It depends on the property. Okay. It really depends, you know, but let's just say between an average, like 4-5%.
Okay.
That's what a seller would say.
Once it gets over 5%, you should be a little bit alarmed, let's say. It's definitely already going into an outlier.
I don't think any property owner here in Portugal will pay a 6% commission or anything above 5%. And even 5%, it's the normal. It is the normal. Mm-hmm. 80%, maybe 90%. But again, I can't see, like, if you're selling a property of like €500,000 or €1 million and being charged a 5% commission, it's possible. But then again, they probably have a lot of their budget and marketing on material, you know, magazines, etc. I don't know, television, you name it. Got you know, it. I mean, here in Portugal, you could do it as well. And you know, but it's I don't think it's one of those things that. Nowadays, you have to spend a big budget on marketing because there's so many other tools to do it that are a lot more inexpensive as they were years ago. Years ago, you would spend 1% of that commission, maybe 1% of that commission on promoting the property. No, you don't have to spend 1%. So if you don't have to spend it, then I think you can give the property owner a discount.
Absolutely.
And everybody likes a discount, right, Michael?
Concerning the stamp duty tax, you said, the lawyers, more or less, your lawyer probably is...
And the stamp duty, just to give you an idea, the stamp duty, there's actually a property transfer tax. So say if somebody's buying a first time, if they're buying, it's not the first time, if they're buying a house or an apartment to live permanently as their permanent residence, and it can apply to foreign as well, okay? And if they declare, this is going to be my permanent home, if they're exempt up to 92,000 euros and 400 and something euros and change. And so what, and then there's different levels, and according to that level, then you pay 1% or 2%, but then you can deduct. But let's just say that all together between the property transfer tax, the stamp duty tax, whatever. If somebody's using a bank, then you have to pay a stamp duty on the actual contract. And what's the stamp duty is the actual contract to being registered by the notary to pay a tax. Mm-hmm. It goes to the government. It is what it is. For every contract that's done, you have to pay a stamp duty on it. And so, but in general, you can look at like between a 6% total cost.
Okay.
So if you're buying 100,000 euros, 6,000 euros, okay, easily. You know, you're buying a 500,000 euro house, 30,000 euros, yes. Between property taxes and the lawyers and everything, between 6-7%, that's what you should, at minimum. Mm-hmm. Of course, it could be a little more, but at minimum 6%, but it's a good number to judge it by.
Okay. Walking quickly, or tell me if I'm wrong on my assumption on the buying process in Portugal. I contact the buyers, I contact a real estate agent, say, okay, I'm looking for an apartment. I say, perfect, that be it that one. I sign with it, with the real estate agent, a promissory sales contract at the second mm-hmm. stage. And then once the other party also signs it, I assume, with the seller's side, then we go to the...
It's a binding agreement.
Yeah.
It's CPCV. It's an acronym, and it stands for Contrato, Promessa, Compra e Venda. Mm-hmm. And it's a promise to sell, promise to buy. The seller promises, and the conditions at the price, he's going to be receiving a down payment. And the closing will be in 30 days or 60 days. And those are all negotiable between the two parties, you know.
Okay.
But usually it's between 30, 60 days, 90 days sometimes. And you know, but again, it could be, I've had contracts where the buyer only can pay it off at the end of the year and the seller accepts it. Okay. So there's, you know, it's in between. There's no set.
Okay. And it also normally includes already a down payment.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Usually for example, if you're buying... a 100,000 euro property, somebody will give 10% down because, you know, then they need to, they have to have 10%, because if they're using a bank loan, okay, the bank is going to only lend 90%. So they have to have 10% mm-hmm. to give down. The bank will loan 90% of it. And so they give 10%, then they sign the contract. He promised the owner, property seller promises to sell, the buyer promises. If the buyer backs out, he gives he signs the document, gives a percentage, 10% or whatever amount. He backs out. I don't want the property anymore. He loses. He forfeits the down payment. But on the other hand, if the property seller sells it to somebody else, he has to be give the buyer double of what he gave down. If somebody gave, you know, for example, if they put 10,000 euros down, and for some whatever reason, the property seller decides he cannot break his agreement. He has to fulfill the contract. And so the buyer can either receive, it's a choice, he can receive a double payment, or he could say, I don't want double payment, I want the property. And he has to be compensated for the whole amount. So you make him, it's okay. In Portuguese, it's... executar o contrato. You're going to execute the contract. It's a legal term that's built into the civil code, and I'm not going to get into that. That's a lawyer that's going to give you that information. Should be, but it's common knowledge for anybody in real estate, and the way that it's the article code of 830, okay, which it says that precisely that if the article code 830 is built into that. It's because of giving the down payment and the disputes and everything. It's what it is. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so you're rather sure, Michael.
A lot of information, right? That's what I said. It's not easy buying a property. It's stressful, right?
You'd rather be sure before selling.
No, but that's when you work with the client, right? When you work with the client, and you know they don't know, and it's a stressful time, whether for the seller, whether for the buyer, and you know, us professionals, we have to be ready for those things and to guide, inform. That's what we're here for. You know, a realtor, what he does is he informs for the buyer or the seller. Again, but I work with the buyer, so I'm interested in defending and work and informing the buyer. The seller is going to be informed by my colleague, and so. But sometimes, if I have a colleague that's interested in one of our listings from my team, then my colleague represents that seller, and so do I. And so we're working for the seller then. And all it is informing, you know, maybe they make an offer, how much, you know, how much is an offer to make it, whether you do an MCA or MCA is the U.S. term, but like it's the market comparative analysis, mm-hmm. Et cetera. Or, you know, so you can see, okay, this property was sold. That's what I say. In the U.S., you have a lot of mechanisms to know. Here we have to do it our own. We have to do a lot more legwork finding it. But it doesn't change the fact that you have to inform the buyer. You have to inform the seller, and that's our main function. That's what we do as realtors, is informing the client of what you know, what the process is, guiding them, etc., informing, because ultimately it's their decision. And if they decide, okay, I buy it, I'm not going to give 100,000 euros. Okay, you're not ready to give 100,000 euros, but you inform them that, you know what, if you want that property, for that, you're going to have to pay that amount because it's worth that amount. And if you're not buying it, then somebody else will. Mm. So don't blame me. Yeah, if then you say, hey, why didn't you tell me it's sold, et cetera, you know, so it's informing. You inform the client, and it's the most important thing and the only thing that you can contribute and add value to the transaction is informing the buyer or the seller. Yeah. And, you know, the rest is up to them to decide.
Absolutely.
It really is. But it's not easy. It's stressful sometimes. But that's why they trust the professional. A lot of times you have, like, some buyers that want to do direct buy from the owner. Man, it's, you know, like, you need a professional to guide you. You really do.
Yeah, I think can become a nightmare, especially like trying to do it on your own. But a real estate agent has to be involved, isn't it? Like that, you cannot do like peer to peer directly, like buyers to sellers.
Oh yeah, you could do buyer and seller directly. Okay. Yeah. But that's what I say. But there's so many things that can go wrong on any given transaction that you may think that ultimately you're going to be saving. You think you're saving a commission, but then, you know, you're going to be paying a lot more in the long run.
Yeah, totally.
And that happens a lot because then you're not aware. Like you said, well, this and that and everything, you know, okay. It's a lot of stuff for a professional. It's simple stuff. It's things you do every single day. You know, it's normal. That's our job. It's not even a job. That's what we do, you know, and that's what and just informing the client. That's the function of a realtor and, you know, and as a professional.
I guess the least you're going to pay for is your own life expectancy. So
something like that.
Yeah. I would definitely go for
sometimes
it.
The scare, you know, you're scared, like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's just well worth contacting a professional to get the job done. It's because then you have somebody working for you, whether it's you're selling the property, you have somebody working for your best interest, or whether you're buying a property, you have somebody working for you, representing you to meet for you to representing
totally,
you. It's just basic.
Your final thought. thoughts which you would like to share with the audience? We are almost at the end. I know we could talk for hours.
We could do this for hours, Michael.
I know.
Have to come back. I have to come back another time to talk about the food and the wine and why people and all the things, the beautiful things about Portugal. We got into more of the more serious stuff. But you know, and it's good. It's because people need to know this, because a lot of times it's information that they should have. But we definitely have to do another program on the advantage, not the advantages, but the quality of life and the cost of living in Portugal, and the benefits of all of it. And, you know, not to mention the 365 days of sunshine, not to mention, you know, there's no crime everybody has, but like, you know how many times I forget to leave my car? I leave it open. I mean, you know, I leave the key, etc. You know, it's just, you take it for granted. Mm-hmm. But again, this is so much more laid back. And that's why people choose Portugal. I mean, you know, but my final thought would be that, you know, Portugal is one of the fifth best place rated. This is not me saying it. This is rated by Expat Magazine. Okay, where, for example, the number one country is Costa Rica, etc. There's other countries, Singapore, but Portugal is rated number 5. Last year was number 3, but this year, out of a survey of expats all over the world and living here, all over the world and living here in Portugal, and all over the world, because they compare it to everything else, it's been rated. So it's one of the best countries right now to be looking at. To invest, and not only invest, but I mean, in the sense where, like, investors for businesses and everything, but for people to live, because of the quality of life, because of, and when they base it on cost, they base it on, you know, safety, they base it on infrastructures. And we, you know, even today there was an article published today. No, but for example, the island of Madeira becoming for nomads, which, you know, you have a big people working out of their laptops, you know, and they can work in at a beach or anywhere. And Madeira is becoming one of those, and Lisbon is right behind them, a mega cities and an attraction for the nomads to work, where they have incentives for them, costs, everything. So there's a lot of advantage, and that's what I leave you with. I think Portugal, and because, you know, it's one thing when I've been living here for 20 years, and I call it my home. For a reason. I mean, I feel I'm Portuguese at heart, and, you know, but my mentality is American. I have the Portuguese heart, but I have the American way of doing business, and more professional, more organized. Not to say that we're not professional or disorganized there in Portugal, but there's a different way of doing things there. And, you know, even for us estate agents, having a lot more regulations, you know, and stuff like that. And that's another, we could do another show about it, about the regulations here in Portugal and the licensing and what is the estate agent, the legalities of it, because there's a lot. And again, my mentality is there, thinking of it. But my heart and my soul, and this is where my home is. And I couldn't choose anywhere else in the world to live. And I could live anywhere else in the world, but this is where I choose to live. This is my home. This is my home, and that's what I leave people with.
Whenever I talk to you, I really feel it. I really feel that you're so happy where you live, and also the way you do business, also the way you express your lifestyle. It's really, really nice always to talk to you. It's really good. I like it. It's so authentic. So
it is what it is.
Exactly. I just have to say that.
Yeah. Thank you. But it is, and you know, and when people ask me this, is it really like that? And you know, like I said, it's anyone that knows me as a person, as a professional, it really is. And it there's a lifestyle. I have my lifestyle. There's people that maybe I can't buy. I could drink a bottle of wine every day that it costs me, you know, about €2 in the supermarket. I can have a bottle of wine every day. I can't drink. I won't drink a bottle of wine every day. Well, almost, you know, if you figure out throughout the whole year, it averages out. Hey, you know that Portuguese are the most where they consume, the biggest consumers of wine are Portuguese. And so, I mean, we're the numbers bigger than France and anywhere else in the world. And so I'm sure I contribute to those numbers, you know, and the reality, Michael, is that Portugal has, you know, like so many of them. Like I said, we could do another program about it, you know, any other time. But this is my home, and it's true. And you know, it's ultimately about getting the job done. And for me, it's about promoting Portugal and the quality of life. And because I live it, you know, and that's when you say, I talk about it and I live it. And this is it's authentic. It's real because, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, maybe I can't buy a 10-year-old wine every day to have, but there are people that can buy it. And, you know, that's okay. And we want that buyer, that person that has that can afford that quality of life. That's a good thing. And there is. And you can go to a supermarket and buy a bottle of wine for 10 euros. I afford one about 2 or 3 euros, you know, and so that's my budget. But it's possible to do. But where can you do that? You know, when you have a nice bottle of wine, you know, not maybe every other day, or you have a bottle for occasionally for. But if you have like 4 people, you're having dinner at home, a family, etc., and each one has a glass or two of wine, one bottle of wine for less than 3 euros. I mean, you have even cheaper, but I'm saying, you know, a great bottle of wine. And so the quality of life, that's what I leave it with.
I like it. I learned a lot today. You gave us a great intro again over.
Well, I'm very thankful in the opportunity, Michael, to not only. It's not about promoting me. Forget it. I think, of course, it's you know, would I want a client to use me and not my colleague? Of course, I'm not going to say no. But the reality is, like, the client will find me anyway. They will probably look with a lot of other colleagues and everything. But when it ultimately comes down to making the decision of having somebody to accompany them throughout the process, they will look for that service that you provide and that extra value that you can offer to them. And so, but there's for me, it's just promoting Portugal and having, you know, and the quality and everything. And everything else just comes along, you know, and I think that's the beautiful thing. So
I think that's a very nice statement that everything just comes along, because I think like what you have done is you have invested a lot, and you're investing in relationships. And naturally, once you invest into things, there's going to be a day when you harvest, and that's it. You know, you're just the way you treat the family, and they might move, they might never move. But, you know, from your perspective, you're helping them, you're providing them with information, and you start by giving, and you give the others first and foremost without any huge expectations. And then if something turns
out.
Absolutely, Michael. You know, like
I'm not going to sell a house to every client because maybe they're, you know, they'll find it themselves and everything. But, you know, but you got to do what you got to do. And it's, you know, and but the numbers are there. And if you do the right job, very few skip because they leave, because, you know, you will do the right job. And, you know, then that's the beautiful thing, and that's what you said. And then you can, many years of building relationships with not only with the clients, because I can call them my friends, but the most, and also with my colleagues, esteemed colleagues, because, you know, without them I wouldn't do business. It's for sure. If you don't have, you can't make an omelet without eggs. It's simple. So if my buyer wants a property, I have to work good with my colleagues. I have to have great relationships. I cannot screw them on a deal or do anything wrong, because then they're not going to trust me. Mm-hmm. As you said, it's a very micro market, and, you know, your name is everything, and then people will know. And if you do one thing wrong, nobody's ever going to forget about it, and you're going to be singled out for it, you know. So, but yeah, but thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And, you know, at any time that you want to invite me back, let's invite me back to talk about the other parts of Portugal, that, you know, about the food or the wine. You know, you can, you know, I can give you a couple of pictures and you know, and you can see,
for sure,
you
know, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, how can people contact you?
You know, if they just put a big sign out the window and they say, look for Antonio. when they come on the plane. Now, the easiest way is through my website and through the company name. And it's www.infinite.solutions, solutions.pt. It's simple. It's simple. Or by phone. Or if you Google, it's very simple. If you Google, or you find, and you say you're looking for Property in Portugal. I'm sure I'll come up there.
Perfect.
Or lifestyle in Portugal, or buying a house in Portugal, or golden visa in Portugal. One of those ways you'll find me. I mean, there's whether through Instagram or Facebook, but those are not ways that my contacts, my colleagues, or rather clients, contact me. The internet site is the best way. The website is the best way.
I'll put your contact information additionally into the show notes.
Oh, yeah. That'll be great. You know, that'll be great. I owe you a beer, huh? Then I owe you a beer. You know, a super voc, uma super voc, or maybe a wine, you know, in Cascais or Algarve. You know, I owe you a beer then, whatever it is. If I get a deal out of this, you know, then I'll be happy. You'll be included in it for sure. Thank you, Michael. It's a blessing.
I really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for all the insights. It was super entertaining, but especially also very seriously very insightful. I could learn again.
You got to get the job done. There comes a time that you just got to get the job done. There's a time that, you know, I'm more of a person that just more relaxed, and, you know, like, you know, I don't get too, you know, crazy about it or stressed about anything. The clients do. But that's where you have to work with them and, you know, okay, and explain the problem. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. You know? and for me, it's easier, there's a way to do it, and it's a more relaxed way, but getting the job done, you've got to get it done.
Yeah.
You have to be a professional, and that doesn't matter whether, you know, you just got to get it done. And that ultimately the client, of course, they want to be your friend, but first get the job done. Get the job done, and then everything else comes afterwards. And then the referrals and the recommendations, and you know, when they invite you to, when they come out to visit to Portugal, or even a client, you know, even here that I closed on a property, and they says, you know, you go for a house, that you have to go tonight. I can't tonight because I'm already going and I have another business dinner with other clients. Well, then tomorrow night, you have to come tomorrow night for dinner. We have to celebrate. And then, you know, Portuguese celebrate. It's a full table with food and wine, everything. So it's always never an empty table. And so it's fantastic. And that's the part afterwards that, you know, after you get the job done and the friends, and they say, oh, okay. You know, and they say, well, yeah, you know, we never thought we could buy the house because the bank wouldn't lend the money, etc. So you have to be, you know, sometimes you have to do hurdles, but you get the job done. But thank you. I don't want to waste up any more time. No. But it's been a pleasure, it really is. And when it's about Portugal, you know, I can go on for hours and hours and hours. So it's a passion. It's never work.
Antonio, have a nice evening. Thank you so much. And
thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Very soon. Thank you.
Okay, Michael. Bye. Bye. Thank you.